is that in order for a vine to be grafted in, so grafting is, you do with apple trees and vines, is you would go to a tree or a vine that's healthy, and you'd cut it. And then you would take a vine or a branch from somewhere else, and you'd cut that, and then you'd put the wounds together and let it heal. Now, the profound sentence that struck me in this moment is realizing, in order for you to be grafted in, both parties must be wounded. And so I have to think of when Jesus said his back was a freshly plowed field. Perhaps maybe that was an indication of Jesus being made ready to receive his bride to be grafted into him. That even in his flesh he'd be wounded, he would humble himself into the death of a human being. And in order for us to come to Jesus, I think if we all look at our stories, we had to humble ourselves. We had to be wounded in some way to be grafted to him. Jesus says, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up, thrown into the fire, and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask my whatever you wish and it will be done for you. This is my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. Now there's more of that verse there, but I'm going to skip the next slide here. I'll get Croy to the next one here. We'll jump to the next one. So if you remember anything from today, remember A, that I'm really excited about this, and B, three letters, R and R. So what are the three letters? There you go. And I chose R and R because we usually all know what it means. But it just means rest and respond. Now, Jesus' invitation to us is to remain in me and you'll be fruitful. Now, I'm going to get to what fruitfulness actually means. It can be kind of tricky to figure that out, but there's some scripture to guide us. But the idea is that with Jesus, it's not that we would try to go away from him and say, Jesus, now that you've told me to do something, I'm going to go over and try and do it in my own strength. Jesus says, no. That's if you do that, you'll wither and die and you'll be unfruitful. Unfortunately, grapevine wood really isn't, it's actually wood. It's not really good for anything. You can't really make anything out of it. You can cook with it, so you can add flavor to food with it, but that's really it. You just burn it. And so Jesus says, if you stay close, if you rest in me and respond to what I'm doing, you'll bear fruit. And I think that's profound, because realizing that not every, where do I want to go with this? Have you ever wondered why Jesus would ask the disciples, hey, have swords with you, and then get mad at Peter for using it? You ever wonder why that when you would read some of the things in Scripture that they would appear to contradict, or they'd apparently contradict? Why would Jesus ask me to do this? Love my neighbor, there's different things. I wish I'd wrote them down now. But there's all been moments where I was like, okay, but how do we reconcile these two different thoughts about just different things he would say? And it's realizing that Jesus is inviting us to respond in different times, that Jesus would say even like, hey, pay attention to the grain in the field. There's a time where you would go and harvest it, and there's a time you don't. There's a time where you would put seed in the ground, and there's a time where you let it lay fallow, pardon me. And Jesus, in his articulations, always his parables, he's always using his understanding of the earth and there being a right time to do things and a time not to. And so this whole rest respond is acknowledging the fact that Jesus is doing something different at different times, and our responsibility isn't to try and enforce something, isn't trying to make something happen, but it's to rest in him, remain, and respond to whatever he's doing there. There's one of the scriptures that I remember so clearly describes this. It says, we played the lyre, you did not dance, we sang the dirge, and you did not mourn. It's realizing there's different songs that might be played by Jesus, and if we're not responding, we'll miss something. If we're not dancing in tune to it, it kind of looks funny, and we'll miss maybe what he's doing. So rest in him and respond to what he's doing. And what's profound about this is I think what will end up happening is we'll spend less time focusing on changing our environment and more time on what we can do in it. How many of us have tried to change our environment? Okay, there's maybe four honest people here. It's kind of like when we talk about a thermostat. For example, it's minus 20 outside. How much do you think it makes sense to try and take all the heat in our houses, pumping it outside to heat up the environment? It makes no sense. Like, why'd you do that? But if you put a wall around it and you heat up your own house, all of a sudden now you're adapting to what's going on. You're not just trying to change the environment. Because you're trying to change the environment, good luck. You'll probably be a victim always. This makes us available to produce fruit, because now when Jesus says produce fruit, realizing How many people here actually grow gardens or know about fruit? Okay, cool. Fruit doesn't grow in every season. When do you usually see peaches in the store? Like fresh peaches, not like ones from Australia. Exactly, end of summer. When do you see apples, fresh apples from BC? Like when do you see the BC trucks? Yeah, near the fall, near the end of the season. So it's realizing that fruit is only produced in some seasons. And that's what I think is important, because if we're trying to produce an apple in the middle of spring or middle of winter, I don't think it'll be very successful. If we try to be fruitful out of time, it's going to go very difficult for us. So jump to the next slide. So just to define what fruit is and what fruit isn't, we have Galatians 5. It says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, forbearance, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Against such things there is no law. How many of you ever tried to be loving and not kind? That's why I paused at love, because I think if the fruit is love, and it would look like these things. If you're not patient with others, I'm doubtful if you have love for that person. Which isn't, that's the fruit that Jesus talks about. And what's profound, as we'll go into it, because there's four different seasons we're going to talk about, realizing that God walks in these things, and that's why Jesus would talk about the vine, realizing that the vine responds differently to the environment in all four seasons. Jesus is saying, I'm the vine and you're my branches, so respond accordingly with the times. And actually, Jesus is saying, my Father's the gardener, so he's doing different things too. And so, I'm just excited and I'm losing my spot. But what the profound thing I've learned about reading this book, it's realizing that Christianity is not about action, not action, right or wrong action, but about fruitfulness. Is there love in your heart? Can we get in a car accident with someone and be so secure that God's looking after us that we can care for that person? Can we walk into a room where our family is and things aren't going well, and instead of contributing to the problem, calm it down? Can we walk through a crowd and see someone sitting by themselves who might need help and take time out of our day to say, hey, how are you doing, regardless of their response? So this love is the fruit, and there's a cadence, there's a timing for when it comes to life, and there's a process which God would produce it in us. Now, what I want to get to here is what fruitfulness isn't. Fruitfulness is not good deeds or busyness. Now, there's a scripture in Isaiah that says, your good deeds are as filthy rags in my sight. Now, it's interesting, because usually in Christianity we think, okay, well, I'm just going to do good, and that's what it's all about. It's going to be really nice. I'm going to go talk to that person all the time, and I'm going to calm the moment. Or it's just that God is in this moment, and this obviously you need to get into the context of the scripture. But what I've heard this said before is that your good deeds are as, this is script, a little bit vulgar, menstrual rags. And for me, what that meant is you failed to be intimate with me to conceive of what I'm doing in a moment. If Jesus is the bridegroom, and as a church we're his bride, if we are to be with him and receive of him in an intimate way, we would conceive of something, and we would give birth to life. But if all we're trying to do is just trying to appease him, we're not going to be close. Hey, how would I... Imagine this mic stands Jesus, really slim Jesus, and I'm just gonna do good deeds. Like, hey, look, I talked to that person. Hey, look, I read my Bible. Hey, look, I prayed. Hey, look, I did all these right things. Can you accept me now? Because you only see all the stuff I've done. And the thing is, Jesus really doesn't care about, like, obviously praying's good for you and talking to people's good for you, and obviously he cares about others and would love for you to love others as Christ loved the church, and of course he wants you to do good things, but the goal of Jesus is to be close, be intimate. And so it's not just good deeds, though it can look like that, and it's not just busyness, because how many of us have burned ourselves out trying to do good things and be busy? And we realize, okay, I don't have any of that patience, goodness, kindness in my heart right now. I just want to hit you because you're in my way and I'm trying to do something. I'm not the only one who's had that experience, so I'm happy some of you laughed. So we'll jump to the next page here. And so here's some of the perks of understanding how Jesus works in seasons, and that there'd be four of them. It reconciles apparent contradictions, what I'm mentioning before, where you would read the scripture and you would read Jesus inviting you to do one thing and then another, and you think, okay, how do I do both at the same time? And all of a sudden, there's a time when you would do something and a time to not. It's interesting how many of us would know the scriptures, be still and know that I am God. How many of us also know the Great Commission, therefore go make disciples of all the nations? Which one do you do first? And when do you do the other one? And why are there priorities? So those are the contradictions I'm talking about, right? Because in our hearts, we desire to be with him and be about his business. He's a pretty good dude. We want to be with their dad. We want to be with Jesus. We want to, and part of, like, honestly, I want to obey my dad because I know he has his best interest at heart for me. So I want to do what he says. But what do I do when I find myself in a contradiction? So what I'm going to argue and what I'm going to pack on the hope, well, I think what we'll pack in the next couple of weeks is the ebb and flow of what that apparent contradiction says. Greg Mitchell did an excellent teaching here probably almost a year ago about security and significance and when does one give way to the other. And I think this will definitely shed light on that in a profound way. It has certainly not for me. Ecclesiastes in 3:1 says there's essentially a time for all things. There's a time for everything, a season for every activity under the heaven, time to be born, time to die, time to plant, and time to uproot. And just realizing there's a certain timing for certain things that, because for me as a landscaper, super seasonal, so actually reading this book is really funny because it matches the seasons I'm in. Winter's super chill. Summer's a lot of work. And so it's realizing that just because in the summer, because I'm working 60 hours a week, doesn't mean that I'm defying God because I'm not resting and remaining in him. Or not because I'm not resting that I'm not remaining in him, being still. Just because I'm not being still, I'm not remaining in him. And just because in the winter, when I am resting and being still, that I'm not honoring him by going and making disciples. And so have anybody found themselves in a tailspin where that's a thing where you kind of end up chasing your tail a bit because you're not sure what to do? And you're almost your worst tormentor because you're not saying, okay, well, I need to rest. Okay, but I want to do these things. Okay, well, I need to rest. And you end up chasing your tail. Am I the only one who's had that experience? Cool. So maybe three men over here laughing with me. That's good. Here's my peanut gallery over here. Feel free to shout jokes at me at any time. But this, so it produces a context, and it creates a freedom to do different activities that are necessary at different times because you can discern what's going on. It's other perks. I'll go to the next slide. I believe that really any problem in life distills down to this, honor your mother and father and it will go well with you. Oh, do I believe that? Because the profound thing about father heart is when I went to the A schools and participated in that and learned how to honor my parents, to seek their welfare, not just my own, and not just to self-protect from them, but to actually care, is I noticed other transformations happen in my life. There was a degree, what's the command? If you honor your mother and father, it will go well with you. That is the most profound truth I think I've ever read in the last 59 books. Is that profound reality? And so learning the song that God would play and how to dance with it, I just think is a beautiful picture of what it means to honor God as a father. Another profound thing, too, is to realize that an inappropriate response can stunt growth and rob fruitfulness. Now, the most profound example that I picked up was looking at David. Now, if you look at that scripture in Samuel, it says, in springtime, when kings go to war, David sent out his troops and he stayed at home. Now, it's interesting. We'll get into more of the details here, but winter's a time for rest. There's not a lot going on. Look outside. No, you can't. We'd all really want to stay home if we could. But not a lot's happening in regards to, say, agriculture. You just kind of relax and enjoy the time because as soon as spring comes, you're moving. And with David, instead of responding to spring and leaping into action, he decided to try and prolong winter. And what he ended up doing in the midst of that was sleeping with Bathsheba. So I'm not saying if you miss the season, you sin. That's not what I'm saying. But what it does is it creates an opportunity to do things that you shouldn't be about. If David had been where he was supposed to be, responding to the environment, responding to spring and leaping into action instead of trying to drag winter out longer than it should, you probably wouldn't have slept with Bathsheba. Unfortunately, we wouldn't have had Solomon, so God redeems all things in the end. There's always hope when you're with him. But unfortunately, the death of him murdering another man through a war is obviously wasn't great for David, and we see him lament that in his Psalms. Wasn't overly a positive experience. It's great that we have Solomon, but the pain that David went through is profound. Next slide. One of the most profound things I picked up with this too is realizing it taught me how to suffer well. Now, in Scripture, and again, this is one of those apparent contradictions where we'd say, rest in me, I'm your comforter, lean into me, my yoke is easy, my burden is light. But then in the scripture, it'll say, expect to be persecuted. If they persecuted me, they'll persecute you. In Romans, we'll talk about that too in a couple weeks, about how persevering produces hope and that hope doesn't disappoint. And so it's interesting, okay, so when is it time for me to be comforted and to experience God in those ways and to rest? And when is it time for me to endure and persevere and hold on to hope? And so it's realizing that there's different things that how you would be, how the gardener interacts with you in this winter as opposed to summer is completely different. And resting in winter, you would relax and you would rest as a branch on the vine because there's nothing you can really do. It's freezing out. You can't grow, so you just stay. But in the summer, the heat scorches and the bugs come to try and suck life out of you. And that's a time where you would stand your ground, as Ephesians 6. You stand with firm in the armor of God, and you would push back. And so it's a different response. And we'll get into more of this later. Sorry, it's a bit of an overview. I'm just trying to drive home why this would matter. Why do we bother taking the time to bring in books and talk about this? And for me, what's interesting, again, we'll get more into this in the weeks to come, is it gave me a narrative, a you are here point for me to describe who I am and where I am. It's interesting for me because my name literally means from the warrior's town. I just something about combat. I don't know why. I'll wake up, like I'll just daydream and I'm on horseback with armor riding into combat. I don't know why. I don't ask for it. That just happens. And so everything in me, and ask my wife, I can be quite combative. She can testify to that. That's not a lie. And so everything in me leans towards more of a, like I love Ephesians 6. Like, I love the scripture said, like, endure, persevere. Hebrews, where no discipline is pleasant at the moment, but it produces fruitfulness in the end. All those scriptures I love. But what makes me super awkward is when we say rest and be still. Like, for me, it feels super goopy, and I'm uncomfortable. And I usually want to run. But it's so amazing for God for the read through this narrative and understand that when the seasons change, I need to change with it. For me to try to persevere in winter, oh, that's called burnout. You can try it as hard as you want, but after a while, you're just going to have to give in, and it's not going to be pretty. And so that's what I found amazing, is I found how to trust God and find where I am and how to respond to him in a moment. And I also find that life is better understood in narrative, in a story, than in prose. That's what Jesus did, parables. That's why nursery rhymes are stories. That's the most profound lessons we'll learn in our lives will be the stories of other people, not some bullet point. No, it's funny because I'm using bullet points, but hopefully you can hear the story through it. But I want to give a little more context to the understanding of there being four distinct seasons and four distinct ways to respond to God and how he interacts with us. There's a micro context and there's a macro. Now, micro just means small. And so the small context would be, say, is you start anything new. You go to university. You pick a new class. You learn a new hobby. You start a new job. There's a sense of anticipation and excitement that comes with it. Going to university, super excited. This is, oh, man, I'm going to be a world changer. It's going to be great. That's spring. Exciting new growth. You're excited. There's flowers on the trees. Everything smells great. The snow is gone. Whoa, this is amazing. And how many knows that spring's like a day in Calgary? So summer falls quick, and then by the time midterms come, it's a little different. I'm not necessarily celebrating like I used to. I'm digging in. I'm not leaning against the tree in the park anymore. I'm in the library grinding up my notes because it's just a different season. It's a different response to what's going on. And so, and then I'll unpack the other two seasons and what the responses might be there. But it is like any new thing you start, any business, anything that's new, you would experience these changes. The macro would be the ebb and flow of life in a person or group of persons. Now, when I talk about winter possibly next week, I think you, church, as a group of people, or as you look at the church, the gathering here today, will be in a state of winter. The messages we hear aren't about standing up and fighting and advancing. It's about what does it mean to rest and abide in him? What does it mean to experience sonship in a richer way? What does that even mean? How does God's love really reveal itself to me? And so that's been the message been here. And so those are just wintertime messages, and it's great. And it's needed because this is the time, and we're just responding to what he's doing. It's not wrong that we wouldn't share the rest of the story. It's just the time we're in. So there's a macro expression to this. And even in my own life, like I'm sharing that for running landscaping, super seasonal, we experience the seasons in a tangible way. Summer, run off my feet, work over 200 hours a month easily. And then winter, hardly anything. It's just slow. But spring's coming, and snow, and we're starting to get excited and move. Next slide. So the grand narrative, this is what I believe to be true and to be what the kind of this whole series is about. The art of success in the kingdom is adaptability and flexibility. Better described as a dance than a march, a relationship and not a religion. If it was all the same all the time, we wouldn't really need a relationship. Because we could just do the same stuff all the time. Like, I would just get flowers every... Like, if my relationship with Sarah never changed, I'd just be flowers every Monday, foot rub every Friday, make myself look really good now. And just it'd be the same thing. It'd just be this repetitive. It'd be like putting a punch card at a machine and getting it back out again. But that's not what it is, because we change. Times change. Things change. Life happens. Parents just got a puppy, so I got to interact with them differently. So it's fun. But in all of this, too, in the dance, is how do you dance well with Dad? It's just a little R&R, a little rest and respond. What I find best is when Sarah and I dance is when if we're able to relax a bit and respond to how another they're moving, we just dance way better, have a lot more fun. We get a flipper and do kind of fun things. And we just get it just goes better. Now, I'm wondering what I have on the next slide here. Oh, here we go, feedback. So we have questions here. Now, I know this material is new, but yeah, if you have questions or concerns with the material, feel free to email me. I'll try to answer them in the weeks to come.